Well, ladies and gentlemen, last time I spoke to you, I was in Nashville talking to songwriters. Now I've traveled from Nashville to Los Angeles. I'm still stuck in traffic, and I'm sitting with yet another songwriter, a well-known songwriter in Los Angeles, who is responsible for a evening of singer-songwriters called the Songwriter Square, which we'll get to in just a moment. But Bill Perry is his name, and I met him at the Folk Alliance in Oakland, where Mary and myself were singing just a few weeks ago. And I got to tell you, and he's going to laugh at this, but he sang a song. I did a songwriter's circle, what we call three or four songwriters sitting around a circle singing their songs. And he sung a song called The Piano Tuner with the Lazy Eye, which we are going to play on this program for you. And I think it's an absolutely brilliant song. So I drove into L.A. this past Sunday to the Songwriter's Square. And Bill is now sitting in his office with me and our tape recorder, of course. And we are going to talk songwriting. Welcome to my show, Bill.
Well, thank you, Richard. Thank you very much. And thanks to all those out there in podcast land.
So, how long have you been a songwriter? Did you always want to be a songwriter when you were a teenager growing up in school?
I first wanted to be a cartoonist, I think, when I was young.
Well, there's no difference between a cartoonist and a songwriter.
I believe so. You're writing stories, fanciful stories. In different ways, but I started writing songs, I would say, my first song. I started writing parodies at first, and one of my first parodies was a play on Thank God I'm a Country Boy, the old John Denver song.
Yep.
Thank God I'm a City Boy was my first stab at it. But I started writing songs with original lyrics, 12, 13 years old, and yeah.
Oh, so quite a while. What actually attracts you to putting words on paper and adding a melody to it? What actually attracts you to doing that?
Well, I like telling a story, and I like telling stories in many ways. Just words on paper, no rhyming. I like writing plays. I like writing short stories. But as far as writing with songs, there's something you can do with a song to underscore, no pun intended, or pun intended, as the case may be, to underscore your meaning, you can sing it a certain way and give a set of words a different meaning. If you sing it with a different melody, you can make it scarier than the actual words are, or make it jovial when the words are a little harsh.
I have a feeling that you're really good at doing jovial, wasn't the word I was going to use, but comedy, no, satirical. How's that for a nice word?
I like to make jokes. I like to take the piss out of something, as the Brits may say. Do you say that?
Yeah, you can say that.
Okay.
Yeah, you can say that. This is on internet, so you can.
All right.
Because I have to tell you that he sang a song at the Songwriters Square this past Sunday, which I hope wasn't a real experience. Something to do.
Oh, yes, it was.
What's the song called? The
song is called Crabs.
Okay. I'll leave it to your imagination, folks, what that song's about. But it took them a hell of a long time to get rid of them.
But they're gone now.
They're gone. Thank you. I'm so pleased about that.
Yeah.
Not that I've been planning on catching them from you.
No. Just we'll keep a good foot apart.
Do you know how many songs you've ever written?
That's a good question. I'd probably say 150 or so, yeah.
Are you very regimented? Like, do you get up every morning and write a song with you? Are you really?
When I'm in songwriting mode, lately I've been just finishing an album, and so I have been in editing mode and in checking out art mode for the album cover and that. And I've really been working on that and now doing PR and stuff. But when I'm in writing mode, I absolutely write a couple hours in the morning, a couple hours in the afternoon. And then as it flows, I do a lot of writing, or the more free-form writing, in my car. That's when I'm focusing on driving, that allows my mind to kind of just wander.
Yep.
and work things out. Maybe I have a certain idea, but
you have
I'll
a recorder?
Try it this way.
You have a...
Absolutely, yep. at all times. And excuse me, and I'll work out this way or that way and see what works best, and I'll have 10 different versions which I'll later look at and listen to and decide which lands right.
I guess all of us songwriters have various experiences, but my experience recently has been that I'll sit for 2 or 3 hours in the evening and try. I've got this idea, and I write my lyrics on a computer, and then the melody comes second, comes afterwards. I have to change the words around, of course, but I've found that by 10 o'clock or 10:30 evening, I'm nodding, and nothing's coming. 4 o'clock in the morning, I sit bolt upright, and it. I finish the song in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Does that happen to everybody? Does that happen to you?
Every song is different. Every song works out differently. I'll often, a lot of my songs are story songs based on true stories most of the time. And so what I will do is write pages and pages and pages, free write, hand write, the story as much as I remember, and then get into, and that will lead me into different angles of the story and different points of view and different takes on it, and I'll write pages, and then maybe I'll go back and find one line within that, and then end up writing, using that to write pages about that. And so it's a long process to find the grist for the mill, so to speak.
Well, this being an election year,
yes,
I really wanted to write something funny, because to be honest with you, I'm finding all this stuff hilarious. Or sad, whichever way you like to look at it.
It's very, it's both. It's certainly both masks of the theater tradition.
And I can't just find the line, stump the Trump. I just can't find the line that I want to. Have you written anything about the election?
No. I don't believe politics and religion, those sorts of things, I find best to not speak about in mixed company. If I'm speaking about politics, I rather just talk to the people that agree with me and discuss that. If I'm trying to foist my opinion on other people, no one's going to change their mind. I'm not going to change anyone's mind. I feel it's a lot like hitting myself in the head with a hammer.
Yeah, I can't think, now I'm sitting with you, I can't think of the name of the song. Tom Paxton wrote a song about in an election year when they were... it's gone. I can't think of the name of the song. But it wasn't deep into politics. It was just funny, the way people react and behave and all that stuff.
Uh-huh.
But I don't seem to be able to come up with the...
I rather do slice of life, be it crabs or piano tune with a lazy eye. That it may not be a slice of anyone else's life, but hopefully people can relate somehow to my personal story. And that's another one of my philosophies. I believe as a writer, the more personal and specific you get about your own stuff, not try to make something general, but make it very specific to your own experience, the more universal it will become.
I think the more people can relate to that.
Yeah, yeah.
I do. Talking about that song, the piano player with the lazy eye.
Piano tuner.
Piano tuner. I'm sorry. Uh-huh. I apologize. Piano tuner with the lazy eye. How did you come to write that? Is a true story?
Absolutely true story. It's I had an old piano, and I was living in a small apartment in Hollywood, and I had a free piano. It cost me a couple $100 to get it moved, but it was a freebie, and it was an old 1920s piano.
And you play piano as well?
I do, and it was out of tune, and so I looked in the Yellow Pages, and all this is in the song. At the time, the phone book. And I found her, and she came by, and she came in like a house of fire, just a bundle of energy, and started talking and started working on the piano. And a few lines in as you'll hear in the song, a few lines in, she started telling about her life. And at that point, I pulled out a pad of paper and just wrote down everything she said, and wrote down both of our sides of the conversation. And I had 10 pages of
wow.
of stuff to work with. And like I said, and you know, it's almost like a sculpture to me. I have to write down pages and pages and pages and pages of words. And that is my block of marble. And I start chipping away at that block of marble.
That's interesting.
And somewhere inside that block of marble is the finished song. But I got to chip away these words, and I got to chip away those words.
Yeah.
And some of them will be whole concepts of the song. It's like, you know what? I got to get rid of that because I want to keep the focus of the song going forward and moving forward and being an interesting road for people to listen to.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, you've heard how he came to write the song. So let's play the song. Here is The Piano Tuner with The Lazy Eye by Bill Perry. And we'll be right back with more conversation directly after the song.
Well, I found her in the phone book between physicians and picture frames. She showed up wearing parachute pants. Her hair was gray and pixie cut, and had a cowlick sticking up. A t-shirt said, Vive la France. The one eye on the left was looking straight at me, but the other one didn't even try. Let's take a peek at that old upright and see what we can see, said the piano tuner with the lazy eye. It was an old Draper and Sons from 1917 with original strings and ivory keys. And she opened up a leather wrap, laid the tools out on her lap and said, I'd love to work on these. I asked her, could I watch her? In fact, that's what she preferred. Most people leave, she said, I don't know why. So I made some coffee for me and a cup of jasmine tea for the piano tuner with the lazy eye. And oh, when she started to play, well, it sounded like an old rusty horn on an old Chevrolet. And oh, she said, if I don't break a string, I'm gonna teach this piano to sing. Well, I asked her what she did when the piano tuning's done. I go to jail, she said, that's what I do. My husband's in there for killing a man, that's why the visits to jail began. He did it too. He's the most honest man that I've ever known, and murder is the most honest crime. Jails are full of honest murderers and lying thieves, said the piano tuner with the lazy eye. Then she talked about her years in the county mental ward. She said, my family got me in that mess. I wasn't crazy, that's the thing. It's just I always like to sing. Too happy for my own good, I guess. You had to act real cool, or they'd send you off to state. That's one ticket I didn't want to buy. They finally let me out, though I never did escape, said the piano tuner with the lazy eye. Then she told me more adventures, cause they'd happen every day. And she worked those tools while she talked. And she'd take another sip of tea and fix another broken key, and the strings would stretch, but they never popped. When she finished with the tuning, she looked right at me and said, this old girl's gonna be just fine. Couldn't tell if she was talking about the piano or the piano tuner with the lazy eye. And oh, the music she played was like sunrise and fireflies and lemonade. And oh, with hardly doing a thing, she taught that piano to sing. Well, I paid her in cash, and I waved a goodbye. I think about her now and then. She's out in the world somewhere, finding pianos to repair, so they can sing again. Some people spend their lives searching for a miracle. Some let the miracles pass them by. I found mine in the yellow pages, the piano tuner with the lazy eye.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that song, folks. Because of my accent, Bill just corrected me. His name is actually with a B and not a P. So it's Berry, not Perry. Now, I don't know what you heard on the other end of the tape recorder, but it is Bill Berry, all right, with a B. So you can look him up on the internet. He has a website.
Yeah, BillBerryMusic.com.
See, there you are. I didn't even have to ask him. So let's talk a little bit about Songwriters Square.
Great.
Didn't you just take a sabbatical from that?
We did. I'd been doing Songwriters Square. Songwriters Square is a songwriter showcase. Like many songwriter circles, you'll see them, and they'll be up on a stage. And so I renamed it Songwriter Square, and I bring the four writers, myself included, so there's four altogether, facing each other. We're in a tight little square in the center of a theater with the audience surrounding us.
And I think the concept works very well.
Thank you very much. And so I brought that here. I had a friend who owned a theater, and he kind of said, what kind of show would you want to bring? And I just said, well, maybe this one. And it's sort of based on something they do in Nashville at a place called the Bluebird.
Yeah, I've sung there many times.
Yeah, a wonderful, wonderful place. And I saw a show there featured Don Schlitz
yep.
who wrote The Gambler, and, yep. and some of his best friends. And it was the most emotionally satisfying. I laughed and I bawled my eyes out crying. It was the most wonderful theatrical musical experience I'd had in my life to that time.
Have you been there recently?
I have not. Well, I've been to Nashville, but I have not been to the Bluebird.
Bluebird has changed a lot, thanks to the Nashville television show.
Oh, terrific.
Because now you have to get there an hour to hour and a half before the doors open, which means you standing in a long row of kids about 17 or 18 years old right across the parking lot, and you get to sing one song.
Well, when I went, which was probably 10 years ago, I went on something called Tin Pan South. It's a week-long festival where all the clubs have songwriters, and there's seminars and this and that. And I had to stand out line, too. In fact, what was great is I was in the... I was still outside. They had sold out, and I was in the waiting list line. And someone who had a ringside seat, a stage-side seat, didn't show up, so I got to sit there. That's why I was so right up front. But so Songwriter Square is somewhat based on that, and we did it for 2 years, and I just needed to take a little break. I focused on recording the album. That was where my main focus was, and I was just a little tired. It's a tough show to put on. We're small. We're a small group of folks. But recently, I had the opportunity to start it up again, and so we said, why not? And we've begun. We started our first show, January 2016. We had Kyle Vincent perform.
I got to tell you, I was impressed with Kyle.
Kyle's terrific.
I've got to call into him and see if I can get him on this show.
Oh, he'll do it. He's a smart cookie. He's a wonderful performer.
Yeah, he is.
And he's a worldwide performer, and he's just terrific. So Kyle was nice enough to do it. My friend John Wicks, who had performed in a band for many years called The Records, was also on the show. Michelle Vreeland, a local songwriter, and myself. And then, so every month, I invite three new songwriters. Next month is well-known James Lee Stanley, who's a folk songwriter and has been around for many years. Greg Sutton, I love his story. He played with Bob Dylan, and he was also Andy Kaufman's musical director. And Patricia Bahia, another local writer. And month after that, from Lone Justice, Marvin Etzioni, and from Translator, Steve Barton. So we have a lot of different people coming in through all the time. So thank you for joining us. What did you think of it?
I thought the concept was excellent. I had already worked it out in my mind that it was a square, and that I like the eye contact that the performers have. I like that a lot. And it seemed like they were all impressed with each other because that came across. And the sound was excellent. Personally, you could actually do it without a PA system in such a small theater. Well, for a lot of us, anyway. Maybe not all, everybody has a quiet voice, loud voice like I do or you do.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I liked it a lot, and I highly recommend it. Anybody's interested in original songwriting, and the history and the stories behind the songs, this would be an ideal place to go. Tell them where it is.
Right. It's at the Lyric Hyperion Theater on Hyperion Avenue in Los Angeles, California. We perform the third Sunday of every month, which changes around a little bit, but it's always the third Sunday of every month, Songwriter Square at the Lyric Hyperion Theater in Silver Lake.
So, having said that, I am going to now play the song that he sung this last, that Bill sung this last Sunday, which actually floored just about all of us, including the doctors that were sitting there. Anyway, this is called Crabs, ladies and gentlemen, and it means what it says. We'll talk to you just as soon as this record's over. Here is Bill Berry and Crabs.
Years ago, I met a girl, a fair, beguiling beauty. She asked me, would I stay with her? I humbly did my duty. For days, my heart was filled with bliss. I was floating on a breeze, till I noticed something was amiss, way down in my dungarees. Gave me the crabs. She gave me the crabs. Well, I didn't believe it would happen to me, but I got them bad. She gave me the crabs. Itchy, creepy, crawling crabs. She didn't keep a cup clean, if you know what I mean. And now I got the crabs. They is so bad I couldn't cope. Stayed?
Yes, they did.
Well, the answer to your problem is rain.
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 For killing crabs, rain is the king. Just don't let it touch a ding-a-ling. Hey, work for me. Oh, one more thing. It's gonna sting. Well, I took some time to think.
Cause I don't have the power.
tell him thanks. He said, that's what friends are for. Remember, keep away from skanks. And you won't get the crabs anymore. No crabs, no.
Barry, and I'm pleased to announce that he is medically now healthy and ready to start again.
All clean, ladies.
So, let's talk about the CD.
Okay.
Because we all have stuff that we're trying to sell, let's face
it. Well, we all have music out there, and I am really proud of this new CD. It's called Awkward Stage. And it's a 10-song CD. Both the piano tuner with the lazy eye and Crabs are on it, as well as 8 other songs. One of the songs is called The Day We Stole Steve Martin, which is another sort of Shaggy Dog tale, but a true story of me and some friends trying to steal a Steve Martin cardboard standee from a record store. Well, I put a word into Steve Martin's people, and he was kind enough to be on the record. He sings on it, and there's a pretty good little banjo piece on there too.
He's a good player.
Yeah, so I'm really proud of that. And so that can be downloaded or picked up over at songwriterssquarerecords.com. That's songwriters with an S. Square starts with an S, so there's the two S's in the middle. songwriterssquarerecords.com, and you can find Awkward Stage right there, and it should be in other places as well.
We look forward to that. I'm going to play one more track, and just to end the show, we'll play one more track. Do you gig a lot?
Well, I do the Songwriter Square show every month, and I go in fits and starts. I have a rhythm section that I play with, and we'll do, say, in December, we played 4 or 5 times during the holiday era. Right now I haven't been playing just because I've been focusing on doing the Songwriter Square again and bringing that back. But so we'll, you know, at the moment, we'll probably get back up to about 4 or 5 times a month locally. And if we decide to take the show on the road, we'll do that as well.
Yeah, it's tough. In fact, I was talking last night to a group of people because we were all playing in the 70s and 80s, and to be honest, the money was better then than it is now, because you could do more with the money then than you can now. It doesn't go as far.
That's true.
And the expenses will kill you if you're on the road.
Well, of course it is, especially with any sort of large group. I mean, even at 3, it's just I play guitar, bass, and drums. Even with 3 people, well, you know, you get to a certain age, you don't want to sleep on the floor, you want to, you know, and so...
Well, I mean, to be honest, they've heard me say this before, this summer I did 9,000 miles driving, 11 shows in 20 days.
Yeah,
I got to do my show on Broadway in New York and lots of other gigs, Nashville and Knoxville, like Cincinnati, etc. But ask how much money I came back with.
Actually, don't ask.
Because it's really difficult. Even though the Prius gets amazing gas mileage. I went from Ventura to Nashville nonstop because of timing, and $137 in.
That's out of this world.
It's amazing.
Well, I find, you know, in the folk, you were talking about Far West and the Folk Alliance International, and one thing that can be said about the folk community and folk singer-songwriters is there are house concerts and there are people in every town that can help you. Now, it takes a long time to meet them. It takes a long time to gain their trust. It takes a long time for them to be interested in your music. But a couple of years of doing that over and over, and you can get a little circuit where you're working.
And let's just tell you what a house concert is, folks.
Yeah.
A house concert is where people open up their house to all their friends and acquaintances. They charge X number of dollars, usually 15 or 20, to sit and listen to a concert of one of their favorite performers. Some of the performers do house concerts are quite well known. It's a wonderful way for people that are on tour to pick up an empty night pick up an extra night's work, and you actually learn to work. For me, it was easy because I was used to working in English pubs and folk clubs. But some performers are not used to the proximity of the audience. They'd rather be on a stage with, they've got the, what I call the footlight syndrome. But it's becoming a big deal.
Yeah, no, it's growing every year. More and more people are doing it. And it's a great way to see a show. And so many people, certainly in their 30s, in their 40s, maybe their children are grown, and they don't want to go out to a club, but they want to go and see live music. And if they have friends that are throwing house concerts once a month or so, they know that their friends are vetting the artists, and they can go. It's sometimes it's potluck, sometimes there's there, but there's always food.
Oh, I got to tell you.
Yeah.
I did a house concert in Knoxville. The food that I told the lady, of course she was married to the guy, but I told her that I would marry her.
Yeah.
Her soup was unbelievable.
Right. Well, and that's part of the change in climate, I think, with the music industry right now, is that there's a lot. I mean, as I said, my record is released on Songwriter Square Records. That's my label,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Can you tell? And, but it's, we can do that now.
Well, incidentally, there were quite a few indies nominated for Grammys this year.
Yep.
The number had certainly gone up.
Yeah.
I know, folks, I wasn't one of those that got nominated, but I did try.
And you put out a hell of a record.
Well, thank you. Thank you. You know, it's, I'm sure you know this, and I'm going to say this publicly, it's, you know, how many friends do you have?
Yeah.
And it's money.
Well, I read a very interesting article recently with Taylor Swift's first manager, and this is before she really blew up. But they had a conversation and when she was starting out, and he said, so, how many records do you want to sell? She says, I want to sell, you know, I want a gold record. That's 500,000 records. And he said, okay, we need to meet 500,000 people.
Yeah.
You need to meet them. Look them in the eye, shake their hand.
And she does.
And she does.
Yes.
Every show. She worked it for years and years.
Yes.
And she'd have meet and greets after every show and was genuine and generous with her time. And that's how she's built her
empire. I totally agree. And, you know, I booked Willie Nelson. Well, I've booked him many times. But I booked him at a baseball stadium. And his management said, oh, he'll do the meet and greet for 30 or 40 people. And I asked Willie when he got there, where do you want to do the meet and greet? He said, I'll do it outside my bus. I said, well, that gives me a security challenge. He said, don't worry about it. 3 hours, 3 hours later, he was still standing there signing autographs. And I kept going up to him. I said, do you want a drink or you want to finish this? No, no, stop being my mother. You know, and he stood there for 3 hours and signed autographs.
Met every single one of them.
Every one of them.
Right. Well, and that's our job.
That's why he's
right?
been around for so long.
But that's our job. People, and that's what I like about Songwriter Square, is that it's intimate. The people come, and then afterwards we have the meet and greet outside, and everyone can have a drink and say hello to each other and meet all the artists, and that's what it's about.
Well, folks, we have come to just about the end of our time for this podcast. I'd like to thank Bill very much for being on my program.
Thank you, Richard.
One more time. Tell them the website and how to get the record.
Absolutely. BillBerryMusic.com is my personal website, and you can find out about Songwriter Square and everything that I'm doing there. You can also get the record at SongwriterSquareRecords.com, and there is also a SongwriterSquare.com website, so there's all of those, as well as Facebook and Instagram and all those things.
Okay,
so look us up.
All right, folks, thank you. We'll see you next time on the Village Green.
Yep.
Thank you. And I actually thought it would be really cool, folks, to close this program with another song off the album, and I'll let our fearless songwriter introduce it for you.
All right, this is the title song from the album. It's called Awkward Stage.
Thank you, folks. Enjoy the music.
I'm going to tell you a story full of struggle and strife. It might get a little gory, but hey, that's my life. Oh, what's that on your shirt? She said to me. It's the Rolling Stones logo from 1983.
show I won't ever forget. She laughed and said, how cool, I wasn't born yet. I'm at an awkward stage, don't want to act my age. All I want to do is rage, rage against the dying of the light. You know it just ain't right to go down without a fight. I don't want to turn the page. I'm at an awkward stage.
I'm at an awkward stage.
You know, she filmed us at a party and put it on the net. I said, I'm not even in this thing. She said, you want to bet? And she pointed to the guy with the bald spot and said, who's that? I don't know whether to shave my head or buy a hat. I'm at an awkward stage, don't want to act my age. All I want to do is rage, rage against the dying of the light. You know, I don't feel right to wear my jeans this tight, but I don't want to wear beige. I'm at an awkward stage. You know, I used to be seen at all the clubs, but now it just looks creepy. I used to stay out all night long, but now I just get sleepy. I used to have big hopes and dreams, now they seem a little lofty. I used to be as hard as nails, now I'm just a big softy. Well, I met my folks, we ate in front of the TV. Graduated high school just 2 years before me.
Have you thought about your future?
I just said,
yep.
Truth is, I don't even know what I want to be when I grow up. I'm at an awkward stage, don't want to act my age. All I want to do is rage, rage against the dying of the light. Lady hasn't sung. I never felt so young. So this is war I wage. I'm at an awkward stage, just like Nicolas Cage. I'm at an awkward stage. Yep, awkward.